Farmers are the most generative people I've ever met. Generative and generous people I've ever met. And by that, I mean people who know how to work the magic of putting life into the ground and generating food, and then generating culture around that and community around that. So there is so much power in farmers in terms of being the heart and soul of our food system, what nurtures and nourishes all of us. Over 80% of the biodiversity on the entire planet is tended by less than 5% of the population, which is indigenous people. What is wild is that not only do indigenous people tend the most biodiversity around them, they also tend the most biodiversity inside them. So the diseases of inflammation we see in modern society actually don't exist in indigenous people who are living and in their managed ecosystems. They don't have cardiovascular disease. They don't have cancer. They don't have Alzheimer's disease. They don't have hypertension. They don't have diabetes. They are a society that is deeply inflamed. How do we get back into balance with our ecosystems?
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, one of the things that is coming up more and more in conversations we're having on Farm to Table Talk is the shared concern with the earth. How do we care for the earth? There's a lot of perspectives, but I'll tell you, we're going to have a perspective today that is very unique, because my guest today is a medical doctor, a mother, a musician, tied to a lot of things, and very concerned about how we're taking care of the earth, and connects it to so many things that we need to be talking about, that I'm just really happy to welcome Dr. Rupa Marya. Dr. Marya, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you. I think you've left out probably the most relevant identifier, which is that I'm married to a farmer.
I thought about that, and actually I was going to start saying that, because I was thinking I was working on alliteration, and I thought, you know, I could have the mother and musician and medical doctor and married to a farmer, and I just had a hard time, because I thought the M's were good to kind of get all of them. You are married to a farmer.
And that's really been, my husband is Benjamin Farr. He's an organic farmer, and he has really inspired so much of my own understanding of health and deepening my understanding of health and wellness, not just of humans, but all creatures and all in the soil and in the water and all of that.
Yeah, because you've even talked about how this can reach into the microbiome, our own microbiome, the microbiome of the soil, microorganisms. My goodness, we're going to have a very, very long podcast, I'm afraid, cover all that ground. And I believe, too, your parents came from the Punjab area of India when they came here. You were born here in California, though.
Yeah, I was born in unceded, occupied Ohlone territory, what is now called Mountain View. I'm living in right now the territory of Huchin, which is also Ohlone territory, which is now called Oakland, California. And I have, you know, I work as a physician in the ancient village of Yalamu on Ramatish Ohlone land, which is now called San Francisco. But for 10,000 years, the people who lived here and still do live here tended the ecosystems here in ways that enhance the vitality and biodiversity of everything around them. And when Europeans arrived to this place a couple hundred years ago, just the amount of topsoil that was present, let's say, in the San Joaquin Valley, the richness of the topsoils and the fertility that was there from the ranging animals and from the pulsations of the rivers and the movement of the salmon and the damming of the beavers. So there were these very sophisticated ecosystems that the people had evolved with for thousands of years and were in deep relationship. And within 200 years, those ecosystems have been largely destroyed. The topsoil has disappeared. I think the valley is sinking now several dozens of feet because of the way we extract groundwater. And the animals, most of the wildlife are gone. And so how do we come to understand this moment that we're in and what role we can all play with regards to how we take care of the earth and how we take care of each other. And that's really the central area of my work and investigation as a doctor, as a mother. And this year, I'll actually be starting to farm with my husband. We're starting a project called Farming as Medicine on the San Mateo Coast.
You know, I don't usually introduce people by saying anything about their heritage, but in your particular case, the reason I mentioned Punjab was that they had some experience lately having conversations with some of the farmers that were protesting Indian policy and the Punjabis. Yeah. And from that area in particular, there's a lot of farmers that came to California. And
yes.
There are so many farmers in the West Coast, and they're across the country too, but certainly yeah. here. And we had an experience here in Sacramento where there were, I don't know, thousands that ended up going to a protest that circled, had tractors and trucks and all sorts of things. So I had an interesting conversation with them. And seeing, even in this particular case, expats that were living here in the United States and farming in the United States, but feeling the connection to India and getting people around the world to be concerned about policies happening there. It's an interesting connection. And although no more interesting than what you just said, going back 10,000 years of the connections with who was here before we all got here, including the people that moved here from India, or in my case, Ireland.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So we, so we have common, common roots as peoples who have been colonized. So the reason my family moved here is because, you know, $10 billion of wealth was extracted through colonialism from my country, from India, by the British over, you know, several hundred years of colonial rule, brutal colonial oppressive rule. And the systems that are in place today, you know, people will say that India is a post-colonial nation state. But it isn't quite true, because when the British left, they left their colonial structures in place. And what the farmers are fighting today in India, which is so inspiring, which is the largest rebellion against global capitalism that we've seen in the history of capitalism, is happening right now in India, and it's being moved by farmers. And so the farmers from Punjab are being joined by farmers from all over the country. And it's beautiful to see that people rise up and understand the value of the labor of farmers and the value of our food, and how things have been skewed by policies that go on to advantage these multinational corporations that come into our communities and then dictate how we should farm and you know, what chemicals we should put or not put. And these are things that, you know, it's a great time to be having a, you know, international conversation about our food and our safety and our health and our well-being. But I'm very proud of my Punjabi relatives out there who are holding it down. And yes, I come from a long lineage of farmers in that region.
Well, I'm going to take a shot at trying to get included in your club, because my family also had a grudge against the English, because they were Scots that were transplanted to Northern Ireland and, you know, several hundred years ago and into the plantation of Ireland, where they were in almost slaves the way that they were controlled. And then they were all shipped back over to Scotland. And then they came back over to Northern Ireland again, and they were forced and controlled by some English landowners that they were there. Finally, they ended up making their way to America and started farming. But there was, so anyway, I feel like there's a certain camaraderie there, that there was a heritage, that there was a colonialism that had an effect, even in Europe. Not necessarily.
Oh, especially in Europe. That's where
North America.
Yeah, that's really where it started. I mean, Ireland was the first British colony. And I think that what we see with colonialism is a fundamental alteration of traditional relationships that kept us healthy. And this is in the book that I'm just finishing up with Raj Patel. We're writing a book on inflammation, and we're looking at how the fundamental relationships, the traditional relationships that peoples have had all over the world that have evolved over time, relationships to land, relationships to foods, relationships to seeds with one another, have been altered through colonialism in ways that damage these critical relationships. And the outcome of that damage is inflammation in our bodies, with the diseases that we see in modernity, which, you know, we see cardiovascular disease, asthma, autoimmune disease, inflammatory bowel disease, Alzheimer's, cancer. We're now coming to learn that all of these diseases have in their origin inflammation. And that we're also understanding that those things around us are influencing our immune system to provoke these nonstop inflammatory responses. And so that what role farming plays with that in terms of how the soil is tended and how our food is created has been, you know, a really remarkable discovery, which we know we go to in great detail about in the book. But that conversation between microbes and soil and water and animals and people, these are really long ancient dialogues, and they've all been reordered in the last 200, 300 years. And our bodies are suffering the impact of it. And you can see it more disproportionately expressed in those people who are suffering under the brutal grind of colonialism today. And that in the United States, COVID is laying this all very bare, is brown and black and, you know, Latino and indigenous people are suffering the most from that. And that's not, you know, because of any biological inferiority of people or even lack of access to healthcare. It is the combined process of hundreds of years of preconditioning the immune system through social oppression. And so how can we reorder our society, reorder our relationships along ways that we know can promote better health? That is what I'm very interested in. And I believe that it has to start with healing those things that have been broken through colonialism and imagining new ways of being with our food and being with our food growing systems that are not only enhancing of the earth in that not only enhancing of our climate or enhancing of our soil or enhancing of the water, but healing those relationships that were broken through genocide and that are continue to be broken through systems of racism and oppression. And so if we are what we eat, and I do believe that we are right now, what we are eating is developed through systems that generate inflammation. And we are a society that is deeply inflamed. And no more do we see that than, you know, what happened on January 6th with this insurrection, this armed insurrection where white supremacists entered the Capitol and planted bombs and killed people, let in by the police who opened the doors. So this is, you know, what we're looking at here in the United States. And so it's a great time to stop and deeply think about how can we create something better? Because I don't think we want to go down this road of, you know, where this the logical extension of where this leads to. I think we have the capacity to be better than that and to heal those things that have been divided and to heal the land that has been abused.
Boy, that is a lot to think about. And I want to go back when you started this, when you first said inflammation, I think people were probably saying, do I hear her correctly? Because it could have been like information. And so it is inflammation, I-N-F-L-A-M-M-A-T-I-O-N. And one of the things that you have said before that I've seen online is that we're finding more and more of the ills that we have today are the inflammatory response, that you go through kind of the history of disease and what people were looking at bacteria and they were looking at all these other things. But of late, so many times the culprit's inflammation. And you get a whole list of diseases I could let you articulate that seem to be related to inflammatory response. Is that the reason that there's so much more vulnerability in COVID for people of color that are having being affected by COVID so much more?
Yeah, I think that part of that, absolutely. I think part of it is simply that our society that was founded on genocide and slavery continues to require the forced exposure of brown and black people through what we call, quote, essential work. So the people who, without whom the economy would completely collapse are largely brown and black people who are low to medium wage workers. Or in the case of agriculture, many of them have below low wages and they're in extremely precarious situations where their presence is threatened by immigration here in the United States. And so what a very astute doctor in the 1840s determined, and he's now called the father of pathology in a long line of, you know, medical paternalisms. His name was Rudolf Virchow, and he, when he was 27 years old, was asked to go and study this outbreak of typhus in Upper Silesia, what is now Poland and Czechia. And in that time, that whole zone was the Kingdom of Prussia. And Prussia had gone and acquired these different parts of Europe. This Prussia is what preceded the German Empire. So these people were functionally German-speaking elite, and then Polish-speaking, people who were being subjugated by Germany. And so Virchow was ordered to go and, you know, look at this typhus outbreak and describe what could make it better. And so he came back and he said, well, what could make it better is that, you know, the people are being forced to speak German. They should speak their own languages. They are being forced to work in, you know, low wage situations. You need to tax the rich and give the money to the poor. You need to create better roads. You need agricultural co-ops. You need, you know, so all of the doctor's prescriptions for a typhus outbreak were social. Mm-hmm. He understood that the cause of the disease was not so much the bacteria. It was the social conditions that let the bacteria spread. Now, if you look at COVID, it's spreading in all the spaces of incarceration, whether it's the incarceration of our elders in nursing homes, the incarceration of brown and black people in prisons, the incarceration of undocumented folks in meatpacking facilities, the incarceration of low-wage workers in Amazon fulfillment centers. All these spaces are spaces where people are not truly mobile because of socioeconomic forces or the literal cages that they're being put in. And so what Virchow said is that it's not the typhus bacteria that causes the disease or the inflammatory response. It's the body's reaction to that bacteria. And that body's reaction is preconditioned by all the social phenomena around the body. And so if we want to really look at how to heal the body, you can, you know, I can give you all the insulin you want, but why is diabetes becoming an epidemic through the world? Is it all of a sudden people are now just, you know, can't handle carbohydrates after, you know, hundreds of thousands of years of evolution? No, it's because the social conditions around the people are preconditioning an inflammatory response in the body. So inflammation is actually the body's most ancient mechanism to heal. So when you get a cut, you have an inflammatory response. Inflammation is the body's response to damage. And it is the mechanism through which that damage is repaired. What happens right now is that the damage continues and continues and continues, and the body is never given that opportunity to stop and repair. And so you get an inflammatory response that is running unabated. And that inflammatory situation, that inflammatory response is affecting every tissue in the human body. What is so remarkable about this is that part of that social milieu that is impacting the body also includes the soil, also includes how we treat the earth and how we treat ourselves in the way that we work with the earth. And that is where the connection with the microbiome is so fascinating. It has not yet been completely elucidated how our bodies are in connection, but that is probably the most exciting area of research, because the microbes in our gut, when they are biodiverse and healthy, they counteract inflammation. And so instead of simply, you know, then deciding to just pop a pill, how do we reconstruct our world around us to enhance not just the microbiomes of those who are wealthy or of a certain race, but of everybody. And so that's what's, you know, exciting about thinking of food policy and food systems change that really uplifts our farmers and the people who are working the land, the farm workers, as truly stewards, as central stewards to our health. Wow. And so that is, you know, another reason why what's happening in India is so exciting to me.
You know, as you speak, it makes so much sense that you're also a musician, because you're talking about harmony and harmonious life, you know, production and consumption and the environment that having an influence like that. It seems like, you know, everything is needs to be in harmony. Anyway, it just you do that and you spread your message too, with even with music, and you've been around the world performing and talking about this. But when you're addressing creating harmony that results in a less inflammatory environment, I find myself wondering how you can apply that. You know, like if you know you're a farmer, you and your husband farm. And what does that mean to you? Because, you know, it's one thing, it seems to me, like you could take a certain approach to what you grow and what you're consuming and so forth. But for some people, they also have to reach a certain scale to be able to bring in adequate income to be able to live on too. So how do you accomplish that kind of harmony?
These are great questions. So for us, and it's not to say that what we're doing is, you know, the answer to everything, but we experiment. And what we are doing right now is we are working with our indigenous community to give land back to them and to work in partnership to farm land that is in their holding. And so that sort of disrupts this concept that, you know, farmers are land wealthy, but cash poor, right? So it takes that economic structure and flips it. And then for us, what we're very interested in is liberating food from the market economy. So how do we stop treating food like a commodity and start treating it like an essential human right and a need? And how do we start responding to the hunger of our communities right now, especially with COVID? Responding with the adequate response, which is healthy food, not simply food grown that has maybe a higher burden of pesticides, which we know also disrupts the gut microbiome. So for example, glyphosate, Roundup, which has been said to be safe for human consumption or animal consumption, because it interrupts an enzymatic pathway that only exists in plants and microbes and fungi. It doesn't exist in those, the shikimate pathway that glyphosate interrupts does not exist in human cells. However, when the glyphosate interrupts that pathway in microbes, it means that the microbes that are in the soil get disrupted, and then the microbes that are in the gut. So glyphosate interrupts disrupts the gut of the honeybee. It disrupts the gut of rats when they've tested that in the lab. It's disrupted the balance of the soil microbes. And so we're actually cultivating pathogens in the soil right now. We're cultivating human pathogens in the soil, such as Clostridium difficile, which we've seen in the hospital is this, you know, very scary multi-drug resistant organism, which we used to think was just being brought about by over-exuberant use of antibiotics by doctors. But what we're finding is that it's, you know, actually the community cases are much higher in farming communities. Part of that is probably from the antibiotic use in the feedlots. But then you have to look at things like practices like putting something that is, you know, eliminating a bunch of beneficial bacteria onto all that soil. And so how do we, you know, tend our soil in a way that will be actually enhancing of our own health so that we don't, you know, create these imbalances? So for us, that means farming in a way that is based in agroecological principles. It means that as we work with the soil, we're not just working to extract from it. We're working to enhance our relationship to it. And that we see long-term engagement with systems as our benefit. And so for us, we are working with cities around the benefits that we're doing with our farming, both from a climate perspective, from a health perspective, from a racial justice perspective, and from a food justice perspective. And so these are things that I feel like we can do with reframing farming as a service, an ecological service. So if our farmers and farm workers tended our soil and water for the benefit, not just of their food extraction, but of the whole society and planet, then they would be uplifted the way I am as a doctor. So how can our farmers be then supported in their ecological tending so that their bottom line isn't simply just all they produce and extract, but also it's also impacted by how they tend, how they take care. And so that will require a restructuring of our policies. And that's why we have great people like Nina Ichikawa at the Berkeley Food Institute and policy people like Raj Patel, who've been trying to imagine ways that we could liberate food and food systems so that we're not simply, you know, turning everything that we do into a commodity, but we can reimagine it as a system of care. And so that's how we've been operating, and that's how we'll continue to operate. And it's been a wonderful wild road, and we hope to publish some of our work as we have more findings that we can share with people. But it's been, you know, I'm very excited about this next phase of farming with our Ramatush Ohlone friends. That's going to be another level of healing, which we're very excited about.
Well, one other thing I want to touch on real quick, and that is the effect towards climate change, because you've said, too, that the end result of all of this, the inflammatory effect and the decolonization, when it's necessary, what colonization has caused is that it leads to what we're experiencing right now with climate change. I hate to be introducing one more great big giant concept, but where does it fit? Where does it fit when people can relate to doing what you're saying and what's going on with the climate, with the earth?
Well, when the indigenous people of the world have been and continue to be and are removed from the lands that they've tended for thousands of years, from the forests that they've tended, it is not a surprise to have ecological disruption because Indigenous people tend the most biodiversity on the planet. So over 80% of the biodiversity on the entire planet is tended by less than 5% of the population, which is indigenous people. And the more we push them into or dispossess them of their lands, the more we lose this critical knowledge on how to tend that biodiversity. What is wild is that not only do indigenous people tend the most biodiversity around them, they also tend the most biodiversity inside them. So the diseases of inflammation we see in modern society actually don't exist in indigenous people who are living their traditional ways. So if you look at the Hadza gatherers of Tanzania, you look at the Yanomami in the Amazon, there's several tribal people in India who are living in traditional ways in eating traditional foods and in their managed ecosystems. They don't have cardiovascular disease. They don't have cancer. They don't have Alzheimer's disease. They don't have hypertension. They don't have diabetes at the alarming rates that we do. They might have low, low, low rates of these diseases, but nothing at all like what we see. They don't have inflammatory bowel disease. And an example of this is, for example, in Africa, in West Africa, you compare this one bacteria that we say causes stomach cancer, H. pylori, is a bacteria that in the United States, if you have H. pylori, you have a higher risk of having peptic ulcer disease and gastric cancer. Well, H. pylori is all over the place in Africa, and the rates of gastric cancer are exceedingly low. So it's not that, you know, a bacteria causes the problem. It's the whole balance of not just the ecosystems, but the social systems that are driving these kinds of diseases. So I think that yes, climate collapse is caused by colonial systems that have forcibly removed indigenous people from their homes and from their practices. And so in order to make meaningful change to improve where we are right now, we have to start from the spot of giving land back. We have to start from a place of allowing a healing to happen so that we can work together with our Indigenous communities and understand what are the best ways to grow foods in these regions? What are the ways to heal these disruptions? How do we take care of the salmon so that amazing phosphorus pump can come back up through our valleys and our rivers in California? How do we get back into balance with our ecosystems? And it will require a reimagining of land use. It will require a reimagining of land ownership. But those are all things that need to come up for examination. And that's what this moment is going to require.
Well, one thing I want to ask you about, and then we'll wrap up, because you've got to write a book, for crying out loud. And that is, there are many areas, certainly of North America, where Indigenous people have been gone for 200 years. Unfortunately, they were there at one time. They're not there at all now. But you still have farmers in those areas that I think buy into the rest of your message and would like to figure out a way that they can both make a living and create the kind of harmonies that you're suggesting. Do you have any ideas or thoughts for those folks that they don't happen to have the advantage of a connection, of being next to Indigenous groups that, as you do in the area that you're in? They're in an area there's no one close and hasn't been for 200 years. What can you do?
Well, for example, Jonathan Cardero is Ramatush Ohlone tribal chair. For a long time, they thought the Ramatush were extinct. There were no Ramatush Ohlone people. The whole San Francisco Peninsula is technically Ramatush Ohlone land. And 10 years ago, Jonathan, who is a scholar of Native Californian history, traced his heritage on along his family tree, and found he was in fact related to one of the great great grandmothers, or great 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 grandmothers. And so how do we, to be Indigenous in this land means to be hunted. In California, there was an act of genocide paid for by the state of California to murder Indigenous people and to remove them from their land so that Europeans could settle it, farm it, and extract gold. And so I don't know if I believe you totally when you say, oh, well, there's some farmers who just live in places where there are no Indigenous people, because I've been all over this land and everywhere I go, I've met Indigenous people. And so I think that there is a myth that people aren't there, and that's not true. They're still here. And a lot of them are suffering from trauma, and a lot of them have hidden their identities because they were killed for being Indian. They were, their cultures have been smashed systematically by this civilization. And so I would say, start the process of learning whose territory you are in and learning where those people are today. Who's there? Find out who's there. And then seeing what kind of novel partnerships you can create. Maybe it's giving your land back. Maybe it's creating a land trust with a bunch of other farmers and removing your land from a private property ownership model. Maybe it's entering a cooperative with farmers and Indigenous people, but it's gonna be creating new culture. It's not just simply following the same, line of culture. And this is a challenging time for that. What is amazing about farmers, and why I put my faith in terms of marrying a farmer, which wasn't the best, let's say, economic choice of my life, but truly the best choice of my life in this moment, because farmers are the most generative people I've ever met, generative and generous people I've ever met. And by that, I mean people who know how to work the magic of putting life into the ground and generating food, and then generating culture around that and community around that. So there is so much power in farmers in terms of being the heart and soul of our food system, what nurtures and nourishes all of us. And that, I think, is where people can rest assured that we'll be okay. Even if the economics don't all pan out in the first, moment, or you can't see it in that moment, as we stretch our imaginations, as we awaken our imaginations as to what is possible in imagining another food system, we'll be okay.
Well, we need to have people hear this message, because when you look at the big, broad picture we've talking about, you know, it's easy for you to come to the feeling that maybe we won't be okay, because there's been so many challenges. But you have so much to offer. And I really would like to encourage people to be sure they go online and tell me and share with the people that are listening, if they want to find you and want to find more about and the book that's going to be coming out before long, how do they find you?
I think the best way, there's a website, and I think it's just my name is rupamaria.org. That's probably the best way for people to find me. There's my band, Rupa and the April Fishes, if people want to hear more music. And then I'm pretty active on Twitter if people want to engage there, and that is Dr. Rupa Maria.
Well, and I found there's a lot on YouTube, too. And there they have a chance to enjoy your music, which actually, if I'm not careful, I've got to be sure I don't say that right now, because Google will just start playing your music right here as we speak. So many interesting things. I really admire what you're doing, and I hope you can come back and visit with me again sometime. And I'm glad you're going to be sharing this message at Eco Farm, and I know many other events. And once your book comes out, too, I'm sure you're going to be out there talking about these concepts. You've given us a lot to think about today. So, Dr. Rupa Maria, thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you so much. You take care, Roger.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.